Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, how you guys are doing? And welcome to the third episode of In Between the Lines. I'm Andrew, and always with me is Roscoe. How's your day been going, Roscoe?
Pretty good. Can't complain.
Sound kind of sick.
Yeah, I think the cold got me.
Is that the yogurt or just the weather?
I think it's the weather. I think the yogurt was good for me. The weather's bad. Hope everybody a good National Yogurt Day.
Roscoe drove all over the place for free yogurt. I guess no shame in that, I guess.
Pound of yogurt for free. I'm not complaining.
Of course. Well, obviously, big weekend in sports. Super Bowl Sunday, the Super Bowl. I think it overlived up to the hype. The hype was going to be a great game, and it turned into be probably one of the best Super Bowls of all time. Definitely the best Super Bowl I've ever watched, you know, at least I can remember. Big game, and just in case anyone missed it, the New England Patriots did win 28-24. Big game, first half was neck and neck, 14-14 going into halftime. You know, New England came out, short passes, ran the ball a little bit. Second half came out, third quarter, Patriots looked, I mean, the game was all but over. You want to give me a quick little recap on the Super Bowl, Roscoe? We can kind of have a group discussion about it.
For the first half of the game, early, the Patriots were dominating. They drove down the field once. They threw the interception. Then they forced a three and out, drove down again and scored a touchdown. The Patriots were pretty much controlling the game. It looked like they were ready to play. They were in control. It looked like the Seahawks were kind of out of luck. Then 14-7, they scored before the half. Seahawks get the
31
ball.
Seconds.
A busted play up the middle by Turbin, then a scramble by Wilson, and then they scored before the half. It was pretty much nobody saw it coming. They thought they'd run out the clock, go into halftime, down 14-7, get the ball coming out of the half. But they go down, they get a score, and then they come out on the opening drive. They don't get any points. But then I think on the next drive, Brady throws an interception. They go down, get a field goal. And next thing you know, the Patriots are down 10 going into the fourth quarter, and everybody's like, well, are the Seahawks going to run away with it? What's going on? And then Brady just turns it on and torches the Seattle Seahawks defense in the fourth quarter, going 13 of 15 with two touchdowns, a 97.4 QBR. And he played the best fourth quarter of his career, made his case for Super Bowl MVP. He led his team back. He looked not flustered as he did earlier in the second half. He just bounced back as all the greats do, and I think the main reason for that is they went back to what they were doing in the first half, the quick routes, the under routes to Edelman, and they hit Gronk on an under route on the drop of going down 24-21, sets up the Julian Edelman touchdown to make it 28-24, and well, we all know what happens at the end, but the Patriots, I think the main key for them was winning time of possession. McDaniel's play calling was fabulous, and the game was just great. It was a great battle between the two best teams in the NFL. I was very happy to see this Super Bowl live up to the hype, unlike the one last year where the Seahawks just blew out the Broncos. But it was definitely a great game, and the Patriots, which I was surprised they threw it 50 times. I don't know if it was because they were down or if the run game really just wasn't there.
They
threw the ball 50 times, but
you,
they got the job done and they won.
They You know, against an AFC championship game, the second half against Baltimore, they actually didn't run the ball once. And that's fact. You might, and it was hard for me to believe when I actually heard it. They did not run the ball once in the second half. Every play was a pass. But that just adds to the greatness of Tom Brady. If you guys did listen to our last show, I did predict Seahawks to lose. Roscoe called the Patriots. I really thought Seattle's defense was going to just shine, but Tom Brady in the second half just looked amazing, especially in the fourth quarter. That secondary, he torched it. He did all the work. And even a shout-out to the O-line. I did mention that if New England wanted, you know, if they could win, and their key to winning that game was the offensive line, and the offensive line did their job. Tom Brady only got sacked once, which is astonishing to me against that defense. But their offensive line did a really good job. And I can remember they did do a bad job on that first interception, but their O-line held up really well. Seattle, they're one of the worst defenses against tight ends, and that, you know, proved to be huge. You know, Gronk had an amazing game. And just an all-around great performance by, honestly, both teams. I mean, like that, both those teams played great. I mean, the third quarter, Seattle owned, but the fourth quarter, the Patriots' defense, which needs to be talked about. In the fourth quarter, Seattle had two drives for a total of six plays, 0 yards. In the last drive of the game, they did drive down the field 79 yards, which the Jermaine Kearse catch was ridiculous. If anyone missed it, which I'm going to assume our listeners did not miss the Super Bowl, but the Jermaine Kearse catch was the most clutch catch in history since David Tyree, without a doubt. And, you know, I know we talked about it, Roscoe, and when I made my pick, I told you, man, the Seahawks have some kind of weird luck on their side. What were you thinking when Jermaine Kearse made that catch? Were you kind of just more frustrated, or were you kind of like maybe everyone, especially who keeps up with the Saints and, you know, watches the Seahawks a little bit, were you just kind of like, you know, how does this team get so lucky?
When Jermaine Kearse made the catch, I thought it was over. I thought the Seahawks were going to get the touchdown on that drive and win the game. I thought with that lucky of a catch, I didn't think that the Patriots would be able to pull it out. With the luck that they've had all year, pretty much, the comeback against Green Bay, and then they get this catch on the 7-yard line, I think it was.
Five.
And I don't know how he made the catch. The concentration by Kearse to make that catch is just unbelievable. He's on his back. He's got a defender on top of him on his side, and he's just able to concentrate with the ball coming down on him and keep it from touching the ground and make the catch. I thought that was going to be the play of the game, because I thought the Seahawks would win after that. But I didn't know how he made the catch. Like, it was just too much to handle, I guess.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I mean, great play by Malcolm Butler. Honestly, I mean, he deflected it. He did all he could. He kind of was under the ball a little bit, but still made a great play. Malcolm Butler obviously was the star of the game, in my opinion, besides Tom Brady. Malcolm Butler had a lot of key pass breakups in the fourth quarter, the interception. Obviously we'll get into Pete Carroll right now. Pete Carroll, you know, down at the 5-yard line, gives it to Marshawn Lynch on first down, first and goal. Marshawn gets an easy 4 yards, could have got in. I was surprised he didn't. Patriots should have let him walk in if I were them. So he gets tackled at the 1, second and goal from the 1-yard line. And everyone and their mother is expecting Marshawn Lynch to walk in the end zone like he normally does, but he doesn't. Play call is a little quick slant. kind of like an under route a little bit, and Malcolm Butler jumps the route, amazing play, intercepts it, game over. Well, actually, not game over. I mean, if the Seahawks don't jump off sides, then something could have happened. I mean, I'm not going to say it couldn't have, but the play calls that everyone's focusing on, the best short yardage back in all of the NFL did not get the ball at the one-yard line with two timeouts left on second and goal with the Super Bowl on the line. So I'm going to go ahead and play this interview. Pete Carroll was interviewed immediately after the game, and just to let you guys know what was going through his mind. And you can kind of tell he's all over the place. He was distraught with what he did.
There's really nobody to blame but me. And I told them that clearly, and I don't want them to think anything other than that. They busted their tail. They did everything they needed to do to put us in position. And unfortunately, it didn't work out right. And it's a very, very hard lesson. I hate to learn the hard way, but there's no other way to look at it right now. And so, unfortunately, that's what happened.
We decided to call another call. You know, and we make these decisions every game all the time. And when they work out sometimes and they don't other times. This one didn't work out right for us, you know. And we could have run it and got stuffed. We could have run it and scored. We could have scored against their goal line as well. I know that could have happened. It just wasn't a great football thought at the time. Great football is let's make sure we match up properly so that we can have our best chance to run it and score. So that's all. And in retrospect, we could have easily run it and we wouldn't be talking about this. We might have got stuffed on third and fourth down. I don't know. I don't know what would have happened. But this is what happened.
All right, Roscoe, so what's your take on this? What did he do wrong? What was going through his mind? What do you think happened?
It's easy to go back and look on a play and say you would do it different. In my opinion, I would have ran the ball without a doubt. I don't care what formation I see with the Patriots running on the field, because when you're playing against Belichick, what you think it is, it's not. It's simple as that. He can play mind games with you, and he will win. I don't know why they didn't run the ball. They have a top three running back in the NFL in that backfield, and they decide to go with a slant play. And people are going to say, oh, that's a terrible call, but let's quit talking about how bad of a call it is. Honestly, the man's open at first when he comes off the slant route and breaks in. Malcolm Butler reads the play perfectly. He makes a great jump on the ball and jumps in front of the wide receiver. But if the ball's thrown to the inside shoulder of the wide receiver, it's a touchdown catch. It was a bad throw by Russell Wilson, a great play by Malcolm Butler, and the Patriots go on to win the Super Bowl. If it's a better throw, it's a touchdown, and the Seahawks had the lead. They're up by three, and the Patriots are getting the ball with, what, 20 seconds left? In my opinion, I'm not putting all the blame on Pete Carroll. Yes, he gets some of the blame for the play call, but if you think about it, I think they had one timeout left. So
two,
on second
two or,
down.
Two or one, I don't remember. You might remember
I think it was one. So if you pass the ball, and if your elite quarterback is smart enough, if he doesn't see the play open or he makes a better throw and it's incomplete, you stop the clock, you can focus on the next play. Because after the Jermaine Kearse catch, the Seahawks were scrambling all over the field. It seemed like they didn't really know what was going on. They didn't know how to react after that amazing catch. So if they do throw an incomplete pass, you have third and one, then you can run the ball and you can stop the clock once. At one point, if they don't get it in on second down, I think they have to pass the ball once, because you now dealing with a clock issue, because you're going to be out of timeouts, you're going to be running low on time. I don't agree with the play, but I can see where Pete Carroll was coming from. Majority of my blame goes on Russell Wilson, because the throw was terrible, in my opinion. He leads the receiver too much, and with Malcolm Butler reading the play and making a great jump on the ball, he picks it off. But as bad as of a play call it is, as bad of a throw it is, it's also a great play by Malcolm Butler, an undrafted free agent out of West Alabama. No one hears of him. He's in the Belichick system. He's just another hidden gem. So I don't put all the blame on Carroll. Majority of my blame goes to Russell Wilson, because with a good throw or a smarter throw, you have another chance.
I do not understand how you're going to have to blame Russell Wilson for that. Particularly because I guess I'll start early where we started this conversation. I'm not going to blame – it was a bad play call. I would have ran it. We all would have ran it. Marshawn Lynch is the best short yardage back in the NFL. First off, you notice Pete says they were in their goal line set, which they weren't. They had three cornerbacks on the field. So that's just thrown out the window. I feel like they were caught up in the moment. I feel like, that run happens and you got the time taken away. And, while you were talking, I just looked into it. They had two timeouts on the board. So, they have two timeouts to stop the clock at any time. The only thing I'm going to blame Russell Wilson for is not calling a timeout. They're not in their goal line set, first off. Either audible it or call a timeout, take your time, set up a better play. The play call wasn't as terrible as many people are making it out to be, simply because that is the play that Belichick was prepared for. I know Colin Cowherd said it first. I'll give him the credit. If it was that terrible of a play call, why was Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots prepared for it? It wasn't a terrible play call, and the situation was really a bad play call. And you can't blame Russell Wilson for the throw. I'm sorry. The throw was fine. The throw really was fine. That's all I'm going to say. It was a good throw. Malcolm Butler, you cannot underestimate how amazing of a play he made. He read it immediately. If you go watch the replay, you watch him just dart forward immediately. He read that play. He jumped the route. He just did everything to perfection. You got to understand, he threw that ball to where, Malcolm Butler timed it so well that's why you saw those two combine and hit each other. Because he read it so perfectly that once he caught that ball, he literally just barely, he didn't even beat him. He beat Lockett to the ball. So I'm not blaming Russ for the throw at all. I'm blaming him, maybe. I'm blaming all of them for getting too caught up in the moment. You got to call a timeout. You got to maybe audible. But like I said, if you're going to throw there, not a terrible play call, because they're not the Saints. They're not the Patriots. They don't have a solid big tight end to go to in the fade in the corner. So for them, not a terrible play call. I just don't understand why they didn't slow it down. But I just do not understand how you're blaming Russell Wilson for that one.
You don't think the ball could have thrown better?
No, that ball could not have been thrown better, and that's simply because Butler made a hell of a play. He jumped that route to perfection. I don't know how Russell could have done anything differently in that situation except audible or call a timeout. As the Seahawks, after what just happened, you have all the momentum in the game. So it makes zero sense. And I think Belichick, who out-coached Pete Carroll, realized, you hear Chris Collinsworth sitting there, screaming, why aren't they calling a timeout? Why aren't they calling, blah, blah, blah. And I'm sitting here on my couch, why aren't you calling a timeout? Why aren't they calling a timeout? Bill Belichick saw something, and, he could have said, hey, we've practiced this. We know what they could be doing. Just roll with it. And that's what I think Belichick might have done. Because, he's sitting there, the camera's dwelling him, and he's just looking. He's just watching. Maybe he knows something we don't know. But the only thing that should have been done differently is, I think, call a timeout and take your time and give Marshawn Lynch three handoffs from the one-yard line and tell me he won't get in. The stats say it too, plays from, and we do have a caller, and I will be getting to you shortly. you know, from the 1 yard line, 66% of play calls are running plays. And there's and the quarterbacks have a 63 completion percentage from the 1 yard line. So it's not like it's, you know, it's a terrible situation for Russell Wilson. And there's only two turnovers this year from the 1 yard line. They were both fumbles. But yeah, I just, you know, my final say so will be, obviously I run it. Was it a bad play call? Yes. Blame Russell Wilson? I can't. And you're welcome to come to tell me more, but I just do not understand how Russell Wilson gets the blame for that throw. Because Malcolm, that's taken away from Malcolm Butler's amazing play.
I'm not taken away from his amazing play because he did make a great read on the ball. He jumped the route perfectly. But if Russell Wilson, he was staring down the wide receiver and then he leads him. I thought the ball could have been thrown on the inside of the wide receiver's body. Then he has a better chance of catching it without the defender because the defender's on his back if it's thrown to the inside.
Well, you got to understand that he didn't really stare down the wide receiver because it was a quick slant on the 1 yard line. He didn't have much time to stare that receiver down. You watch that play, and it's just literally the ball is hiked. Lockett takes one step to the right, darts back to the left, and the ball's thrown. Malcolm realized immediately. He just, like Malcolm Butler said, he said that we've practiced that, we've seen him ran, and I knew what it was immediately, and I jumped it. There was literally, like, there was zero time for error, and Butler did not make an error. And I don't think Russell Wilson did either. I just think Butler beat him to the ball.
Quick question: were you surprised they didn't run a bootleg in that situation with Wilson?
I'm surprised they didn't do a lot of things. I think if I'm in that situation,
the bootleg would be my first option.
If I'm in that situation, I call a timeout and I give it to Marshawn Lynch three times. Maybe even if I'm going to run a pass play, I would run a bootleg to maybe Wilson. But, I mean, like you said, you have two timeouts, and it's at second down from the 1 yard line. You have plenty of time. You don't have to rush it. They rushed everything. They rushed it like they had no timeouts, and they had to hurry up and get the end zone.
Yeah. They didn't have a sense of what was actually going on in the game, you know, and it hurt them. We're going to disagree on the throw, but we both know that they had better options on the play.
Yeah, well, I mean, they definitely should have had. And we did lose the caller, by the way. The caller dropped, didn't want to sit on hold, but they definitely could have done something differently. And whether it be a bootleg with one of the top bootleg quarterbacks in the NFL, or give it to one of the best running backs in the NFL. I guess we will never know. But, I mean, we'll see next year. We'll see what happens next year. What do you think happens to Seattle after this game? Do you see them coming back even stronger next year? Do you see them having a tough time this offseason? What do you see out of the Seattle team for 2015, 2016?
I don't think they're going to be as good next year. I mean, I think it's easy to say they're going to come back stronger because they're one play away from back-to-back Super Bowl rings. But if Sherman needs Tommy John surgery, he's going to be out a while. Jeremy Lane is going to be out a while with his gruesome arm injury. And they're losing Dan Quinn to Atlanta, their defensive coordinator. That's three definite regressions. If, you know, I don't know how long the Tommy John surgery is going to keep him out in football, and if he's actually going to need it. I know they're talking about it. Jeremy Lane's probably going to be out for a good bit of the beginning of the year. And then you got Malcolm Smith, who's going to be a free agent. Byron Maxwell is going to be a free agent. Definite locks to come back. I think they'll still be pretty good. And this isn't even going to their offense because we don't know what Marshawn Lynch is going to do next year. Is he going to come back? Is he going to throw a temper tantrum? I mean, the guy's unpredictable right now. I don't think Russell Wilson's elite. I see them regressing next year. I think the NFC West, I don't think they'll win the NFC West or win the NFC Championship. They may come back strong, but I don't think they're going to be as good next year. I just can't see it. I think teams are starting to figure them out, and I guess we'll see.
We do have a caller, and I guess I'll get to the caller right now. Caller on the air, how about you give me your name and where you're calling from?
This is Ryan in Chalmette. I was just I wanted to talk about something y'all was saying before. Neither one of y'all could really understand why they wouldn't call the timeout after the curse completion. I just have a feeling because it's like the Pats had them backpedaling the whole fourth quarter. They had the Seahawks defense completely out of sorts. Like y'all were saying, how the Patriots defense was out of sorts after the curse completion. So they don't call the timeout there to keep the Pats, you know, guessing. They want the Pats to keep, you know, being out of sorts, which unfortunately you have Bill Belichick. They're not going to be that far out of sorts, but you don't call the timeout, and that's because with Pete Carroll, you know, he's always going to want to see if he can push it. That's what one reason I don't really like Pete Carroll, but I'm more of a conservative coach. You know, I would be. So it's just that they want to keep the Pats guessing the whole time after that curse completion. That's really all it is, I think.
I'm not doubting that. I did say, you know, I think they should have called a timeout after the first Lynch run, not the curse completion, because they're at the 1 yard line. You have two timeouts. Which, I mean, and then that takes more of the blame to Pete Carroll. You know, if you, like you said, I wouldn't call a timeout.
Right, but
there.
Then that's just the way he coaches, so you can't fault him for
it
that.
It is. It is,
that's
but,
right, that's
you know,
right,
if I guess just going back to it, if he doesn't call a timeout there, you know, he's got three cornerbacks on the field, then why doesn't he run it? It just, you know, I think it adds more to him needing to run the ball. But I don't understand why. I guess we'll never understand. And he made a good point. Ryan made a good point. That's how Pete Carroll coaches. That's how he's always coached. He loves to push the limit, push it. And that could be why Belichick didn't call a timeout. He wanted to see what he would do. Maybe Belichick, like I said before, noticed what they were going to run, noticed how they were setting up, and they were going to make a big mistake.
It's Belichick,
on that
he's
roster?
Three steps ahead of you. I mean,
always.
The guy's a wizard. I mean, he's going to be ahead of you
actually.
On that football field.
He's a sorcerer who has the ability to bring back players.
He puts that hoodie on and he's got something underneath it.
Yeah, like a cloak or some kind of witchcraft. But going back to you know what you were saying, you honestly brought up a lot of the good points about next year for Seattle. And you know, I did do some research, and one thing we probably do agree on is I don't think Seattle's going to be as good of a team next year. I still think they're going to be a playoff team. They're going to be a good team. I just don't think they're going to be what they were these past 2 years. Dan Quinn is going to be a huge loss for this team, and I'm scary. I'm like, if there's two people I didn't want to be coach of the, you know, the Falcons, it would be Rex Ryan and Dan Quinn. So they still got Dan Quinn. He's great on a defensive standpoint. But here's some things that people might not realize. James Carpenter, your guard out of Alabama, great guard. He's going to be a free agent next year. Jermaine Kearse and Ricardo Lockett, both going to be free agents next year, unrestricted. Also, you know, on the D-line, Kevin Williams, starting defensive lineman, free agent. Byron Maxwell, unrestricted free agent. Malcolm Smith, unrestricted free agent. Marshawn Lynch is in the final year of his contract next year, so he's still under contract to play next year. He's just scheduled to get $5 million, which is in reference to what you said, throw a temper tantrum. Is he going to throw a tantrum about wanting more money and I want my extension before the season starts and I'm going to hold out if I don't get an extension? Possibly. I put that at a 65% chance of happening. And Russell Wilson, who is in the fourth year of his rookie contract. He's slated to make $600K next year, if anyone is not aware. So he's due for a big contract. So I think the Seahawks are in just as much of a salary cap hell as the New Orleans Saints are. All these guys I listed, they are not going to be able to lock up all these guys. Losing Carpenter would be huge to that offensive line. And Jermaine Kearse and Ricardo Lockett, I mean, is it fair to say that those are their best receivers? I mean, they don't have good receivers, but is it fair to say that those are the best? Probably. Kevin Williams, it's going to be a loss. Byron Maxwell, it's going to be a huge loss. And Malcolm Smith, not a huge loss, but pretty significant one. So I just don't know what the Seahawks are going to do. I mean, I feel like they're going to lock up Lynch and Russell Wilson because they feel like that's where they're going to have to put their money at. So this is going to be the same Seahawks team for a while. I'd have to look into 2016 and beyond. But, I mean, this Seahawks team isn't going to change. They're not going to have the money to splurge in free agency. You know, your big spenders next free agency is going to be, this free agency coming up, is going to be, you know, Buffalo, New York. They have a lot of cap space, but yeah, I just don't see the Seahawks coming back strong next year. I can honestly see them going 11-5, winning the NFC West, because I feel like the 49ers are just as big of a, you know, dumpster fire as the other ones. So, I mean, the NFC West is going to be an open division. I mean, that is the hardest division in football, in my opinion. Arizona Cardinals, the Rams, Seahawks, the 49ers, it's a great division. And, 11-5, 10-6, I can definitely see that. I'm going to touch – do you have anything – you have anything else to touch on? You know, what do you think is going to happen with their offseason?
First of all, I think Marshawn Lynch is going to hold out come training camp. He's known for having issues. So
his antics,
and
you still support him for an unknown reason known to me.
Because he's good. I mean, I guess I respect him because he's good, but nothing wrong with being good. He's just a little out there.
Ignorant.
But, I mean, I can say the same thing about Lance Stevenson, but I'm not going to get into that.
Lord, we are not having a Lance Stevenson discussion. We will have an episode.
Out of Malcolm Smith and Byron Maxwell, which one do you think they keep?
Malcolm Smith, because Byron Maxwell is in for a payday, and I don't know if they're going to be able to afford him. If I could keep one, it would be Byron Maxwell. I just don't think they're going to keep him.
And you really think they're going to put their eggs in a basket with Wilson and Lynch? Like, you really think they're going to re-sign Lynch?
Well, they can. We got to understand, like you said, Marshawn Lynch will most likely hold out. Russell Wilson, he's not going to hold out. He's making $600K, and he honestly, I don't even think he cares about it. So I don't think they're going to have a problem with Wilson this offseason. They're going to have to do that next year. But they are, like,
losing Carpenter. I think Carpenter's pretty much but gone.
They lose Carpenter and they lose Maxwell. They're in trouble. They're in big trouble.
Exactly.
And
that's why I don't see them coming back strong. I don't see them winning the NFC West, like you said, because I actually
Colin Kaepernick.
They're getting Bowman and Willis back. And now they have a new offensive coordinator. I think that's going to help Kaepernick. I'm just not counting out the 49ers. I think they can win that division.
Who do you think is a better offense, Who do you think is a better offense, San Francisco or Seattle?
San Fran.
Like
because
this year,
the
or
running,
next year?
Besides the running back position, I think San Fran's got better across the line. Like I think they have better wide receivers for sure. They have a better tight end. I think Kaepernick's better than Russell Wilson as an actual quarterback. But I mean,
you think
I don't like Russell Wilson, so I'm gonna be biased. I don't like Russell Wilson.
You can't be biased. I don't like LeBron James, but put a gun to my head and say who is the best basketball player in the NBA, I'm gonna tell you LeBron James. Colin Kaepernick is not better than Russell Wilson, I'm sorry to say. Kaepernick has been struggling. He's been declining. I do agree that their offensive coordinator and their head coach, I like both those moves. I do. But if you're going to tell me who's going to win the NFC West next year, I'm going to say Seattle or Arizona. I'm not even considering San Fran because, I mean, did you see what they did? I mean, they just fell apart, Roscoe. They fell apart. And if you had to make that decision today, you think San Fran's going to come back stronger next year, or do you think they're going to come back strong enough to win that division?
I think they're going to come back stronger, and I think they'll come back strong enough to win the division because I see Seattle regressing, and until Arizona gets a good quarterback, I'm not taking them seriously. Sorry.
Do you think if Carson Palmer plays out that year, they win that division in Arizona?
No.
So it's not. It's agreeable. I mean, they finished 11-5. I think they go 12-4.
Carson Palmer got hurt before they played the Seahawks both times. Correct. I'm not, all right. That's why I don't think.
Yeah, but I mean. So you think that San Fran could come back, on the other hand, and beat, you know...
Honestly, that division's up for grabs from St. Louis to San Fran to Seattle to Arizona. Because, like you said, it's the toughest division in football. And that's tough for me to say because I'm an AFC North fan. I'm a Cleveland Browns fan. They put three teams in the postseason this year. But... I think the NFC West is better.
Can you elaborate?
Anybody?
What makes Colin Kaepernick a better quarterback than Russell Wilson?
I think he has a better arm, and I think with the right offensive coordinator, he can be better than Russell Wilson. I think he has more talent than Wilson. He's not smarter than Wilson. But I think he has more raw talent than Wilson.
More talent, okay. Like the first thing you said is he has a better arm. Jamarcus Russell probably had the best arm in the NFL maybe at one point. Jamarcus Russell could throw the ball 80 yards from his knee. Does it make him the best quarterback?
Yeah, true. Jamarcus was. That's why he was drafted number one. I mean, he just drank too much lean, but that's besides the point.
You know, there comes a point where raw talent doesn't do it. And honestly, and we're seeing it, and I'm not going to talk about the NBA, but it's becoming huge in the NBA and even in the MLB. Sports IQ goes a long way, and Russell Wilson has it. Kaepernick has the one of the worst IQs at the quarterback, in the starting quarterback position in the NFC West. I mean, a healthy Sam Bradford, which I don't think he's ever been healthy in his life.
Never.
If he was healthy, I'd take him over Kaepernick. I'd take a lot of quarterbacks over Colin Kaepernick.
Blaine Gabbert
is not a starting quarterback. Blaine Gabbert is not a starting quarterback, and I would not take him over Kaepernick. I would not take Hoyer over Kaepernick. You know, I mean, like, you know, just, I just, we strung way off topic, but that's what a lot of people like to do that. I do have a caller, so I'll put him on the mic. Caller, there. You want to state where you're calling from and your name?
This is Gaines from Metri.
Okay,
hello?
You can elaborate on anything. Yeah, you're here.
All right. So one, I don't think there's really much discussion for who's going to win NFC West next year. Obviously, Seattle's going to be a heavy favorite. I don't think you can say San Fran's going to be in it because, one, they're going to get a new head coach. Kaepernick's struggling. He looks like shit the second half of the season. So did that defense. I do think, though, Russell Wilson's going to get paid because how well he's done the past two seasons, won a Super Bowl, went back to it. I don't see him still going to be on his rookie contract. They're going to have to pay him and Marshawn. So I think Marshawn might go somewhere else. But honestly, I would pick Arizona to go second in that division over San Fran because I would take Arizona's defense, even with a no-name quarterback, to beat San Fran out in that division. And obviously St. Louis is just going to probably be another dumpster fire. Even if Sam Bradford comes back, he'll probably tear his other ACL. So
strong takes. All right. But I like them.
Well, how do you like them? Do you think, I mean, Roscoe, I mean, who do you think, I mean, I agree with what Gaines just said. He just said that Arizona finished the second in that division over San Fran. I agree with that. They're getting back everyone on that defense, and they even have, you know, newfound Chris Borland, who was a ball hawk. I mean, but I just don't see that defense just taking them all the way. I mean, Kaepernick is bad. He plays hero ball 24/7.
I mean, I just think, look at the 2000 Ravens. Trent Dilfer was a blow-joe quarterback, but, I mean, he saw the defense. And there's other defenses in the past that have brought a team. I mean, and they're still going to have Andre Ellington, so they have the running game, and then they have decent receiving core. So, I mean, you could put somebody back there, and, you know, it was even shown, like, with those last two games of the season, like, you just take some shots, you might get lucky because, I mean, they didn't – besides Seattle, I mean, those last four games, they didn't get – creamed, but I mean, they were still trying to hang in there with, I mean, all they had at quarterback. But I mean, that defense will get tired up, but I think they can still hold them on as long as possible to do something.
All right, it's respectable. Do you have anything else to add about anything from last night or, I mean, Sunday night or anything?
I had a question for y'all earlier. I'm sorry, I just tuned in a little bit ago, but I know that Dew's first Super Bowl memory was the Titans versus Rams and Disney World watching that. So my question was, what do you think, I'm going to hang up after this, but what do you think was the worst loss for a team? The Titans with a reception coming up short at the 1 yard line, or the Seahawks being picked off at the 1 yard line? And I'm going to hang up now.
That's a great question. I like that question. Roscoe, you go first. What is worse? Mason getting stuffed at the one, or Russell Wilson throwing an interception at the 1 yard line?
I think losing by a half a yard is tougher than throwing an interception.
Well, they both ended at the half yard line. I mean, those were at identical spots now.
I think the Titans loss was tougher to swallow than the Seahawks. I mean,
yeah, I can agree with that. And I agree with that because I'm not going to sit here and act like, you know, I do know all sports. I do have it in front of me. That year, the Tennessee Titans were a wild card team. So, I mean, this team makes the wild card. They fight their way through the playoffs. And they lose at the 1 yard line. That is just ridiculous. I mean, it was amazing. They come in out. Why is my phone going off? They come in out performed. They were trailing a lot of the game with obviously going against the best ranked defense in the NFL that year, which was the Rams, led by Kurt Warner. We know how that went. Trent Green goes down in the preseason, leads them to 13-3. So you're going up against the best team in football from the NFC standpoint. And let's not forget the Titans that year. I know I watched it with you, Roscoe. That year, the Jacksonville Jaguars go 15-1 or 14-2, win that division.
I think
so
it was
Titans
14-2.
14-2, and the Titans get in as a wild card team. You know, run to the playoffs and then lose by a touchdown, stopped at the half yard line on an amazing shoestring tackle. So I'll definitely probably go that one too. And that's what you're going with, that route?
And they were given no shot. I mean, they were going against the greatest show on turf. That was the nickname for the Rams. I mean, that team was, that offense was great. You know, for them to come that close and to fight through all of the playoffs, being a wild card, and then losing by that little is just, I think that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, because, I mean, we had the two best teams in the NFL this year. I mean, even in the great T-Bop Hebert of WWL Radio was quoted saying, in the last 2 years combined, the Patriots were 28 and 11, and the Seahawks were like 29. Like they were one win above them. Like these are the two most even teams you could play against each other. And the Seahawks were outperformed in the fourth quarter. The way they played in the fourth quarter, they deserved to lose anyway. So I mean, definitely, probably the Rams. Definitely. Titans to the Rams. I'll go with that. Because, I mean, Malcolm Butler made an amazing play. They were both caused by two amazing plays on defense. So similar plays, even. They were both slant plays. Just one of them was across the middle more, and they were farther back. But definitely that. We do have a caller, and I'll put the call on the air. Caller, if you can hear me, you want to say where you're from and your name?
Yes, this is Cody from Thibodeau.
All right, you have a question or comments?
Yeah, I was calling a comment on George's question you brought up earlier. What's worse, to get stuffed on the line with a run or throw an interception? Personally, I think it would be worse to get stuffed going up the gut in the goal line, just simply because, you know, you give Russell Wilson a chance to at least dance around in the pocket, and, you know, at least the wide receivers can create a chance for themselves to get open. I just find that it would be a worse feeling knowing that you tried to run it up the gut for a yard and you just couldn't get it. So that's all I had to say about that. And I'd like to hear your opinion on it as well, Andrew, because I'd like to hear.
I think you might have got cut off there a little bit, but definitely in that situation, probably being stuffed at the one. I mean, if you have Marshawn Lynch and you're trying to win the Super Bowl and you give it to him and he gets stuffed, that would be terrible. That'd be heartbreaking. I mean, then you don't have to blame Pete Carroll. Then you could just praise the New England defense. I mean, would you praise the New England defense at that point, Roscoe, if they stuffed Marshawn Lynch at the 1 yard line?
Yes, because he was averaged 4 yards a carry throughout the game. He had 102 rushing yards, and if he got stopped on three chances up the gut, I would praise everybody on that defense. But I want to, you still have to give praise to that defense for stopping him the first time, because Dante Hightower leans a shoulder into him, and I think it's Hakeem Harris trips him up by the shoelaces, and that pretty much was the tackle that won them the game. I mean, because without that effort by them two linebackers, he gets in. I mean, you were talking earlier about, I don't know how he got in. Well, Dante Hightower, who is having shoulder surgery now, he went, patted his knees, took his knees out, and Hakeem Harris grabs them by the shoelaces, and that's what stopped them. I think you got to credit those two guys to come up with a great play and stop them.
Do you, Ben, great question. I love the calls, you guys. Thank you all very much. Just a quick question for you, Roscoe. What do you have any, do you have any input on the brawl at the end of the game? You know, what do you think happened there? Do you think it's just frustration? Do you think it's just, you know, no class and zero sportsmanship by Seattle?
I've said it all year. Seattle has no discipline. They said it during the Super Bowl. They doubled their opponents in penalties, I believe it was, 2-1.
Yeah, they led the NFL in penalties.
Yeah, and they doubled their opponents in penalties when they played them. And they just showed that they had no discipline when they jumped off sides. Because you can clearly see that's what the Patriots were trying to do. They were trying to get them to jump off sides. And then it shows how classless they were to start a brawl. And, I mean, I got to shake my head at both teams because I guess I can't really shake my head at the Patriots too much because if a dude is throwing his hands at your face mask and is grabbing you underneath your helmet, obviously you're going to react. But, I mean, I think the brawl was just like a kind of... I mean, some people are going to say, oh, that's a great way for them to go out. I mean, we're not going to have football for 200 or so days. But I think that was classless. I mean, you're on a big stage. You got to hold yourself together, and the Seahawks really showed terrible sportsmanship. Take your loss and go home. You accomplished enough this year to be happy. There's no need to start a brawl.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. I mean, I even mentioned it to a family member when we were watching the game. So watch Seattle start a brawl or something, and they did exactly that. They're just sore losers. That's how they are. You know, they're sore losers and they're sore winners. And you know, and I'm even so angry about it. I am, you know, the Richard Sherman thing makes me angry too because, you know, that they're gonna be like, Richard Sherman was the first person to congratulate Tom Brady. But I'd like to put a lot of money down that Seattle wins that game. I'd love to see that Richard Sherman doesn't get in Brady's face, doesn't make comments about Tom Brady ain't the best. Tom Brady ain't the best. We told you that. But then he loses and shows sportsmanship. It's like he wants to show sportsmanship when he loses, but then when he wins, he loves to act like a complete imbecile. I don't get that. I mean, I just think it's just what they think they're about. Because, I mean, I just don't get what Richard Sherman's going for. Are you a fan of Richard Sherman and his antics, or do you think he was a polite gentleman who respects Tom Brady and the way he plays the game?
I don't think he respects Tom Brady because, as you saw a few years back, he got in his face and the whole, quote, you mad bro thing came out. I'm going to respect Richard Sherman as top. He's a top three, if not best cornerback in the league, but, I mean, he's off the wall just like Marshawn Lynch, you know. I mean, that whole Seattle team's off the wall, and it's because of Pete Carroll. You know, I'm tired of talking about Seattle. Kind of want to congratulate Tom Brady. I'm just tired of talking about Seattle. Richard Sherman, Marshawn Lynch, they lost. So be it. They showed terrible sportsmanship. So be it.
You think that why is it Pete Carroll's fault that they act like that? You don't think Marshawn Lynch would act like that if he wasn't with Seattle? Like, if Marshawn Lynch was traded, do you think he'd act a different way?
I mean, I don't know if he would act a different way. Hard to say that. But I know Pete Carroll encourages the way they act.
How does he encourage it? He cheers it on?
Yeah, he cheers it on. It's the type of coach he is. I mean, he's a player's coach. He's going to want them to act how they want to act. I mean, that's what it is. You ask most people, Pete Carroll is a player's coach. I mean, some ways that can be good, but he needs to show some enforcement and tell them, hey, tone it down a notch. But when Marshawn, you know, it's all right. He's a player's coach. That's how I think he encourages it.
All right. Well, we do have, like you said, we do have 30 minutes left. So we'll get on the topic and, you know, we'll get off of Seattle. Next year, I mean, obviously Brady's already won. Brady's got 4 Super Bowl wins, 6 Super Bowl appearances. Belichick's been six Super Bowls, everyone with him. Do you think New England keeps it up, or do you think they're getting too old? Do you think the around them is going to hurt them? What do you think New England does next year?
They win the AFC East. Who in the AFC East is going to stop them? I mean, they're dominant. They've been dominant for this whole decade and some. You know, if Belichick and Brady are in New England, Belichick and Brady will dominate that division. It's simple as that. They're the best QB coach tandem, in my opinion. I'll talk more about Brady later on in the show. I mean, plus another thing, this New England team, besides Tom Brady, is very young. I don't think many people realize how young they are. I think I heard it today on PTI. I might be mistaken, may be wrong, so don't quote me on it. But I think they were the youngest team to win the Super Bowl. I think Mike Wilbon said that, or Tony Kornheiser. Not sure which one, but
really, I don't even know that.
I've caught it on PTI. I may have heard it wrong, so because you know, but I mean, I think they're going to continue to dominate the SEs, and I give them a better chance to reach the Super Bowl compared to the Seahawks.
That's 100% agreeable. I mean, they have I didn't even realize they have a younger core. I mean, I can think of off the top of my head, I can think of Jamie Collins, young guy who is really impressive.
Dante Hightower. I mean, they
Gronk.
Do have a few older guys, but I mean, I'm not sure how old Browner is, but I'm pretty sure he's pretty young. Revis still got years in the tank. And they're going to have the core guys like Will Fork and Ninkovich. And they got Chandler Jones up front. Chandler Jones is a young guy. And, I mean, Belichick, I mean, you'll see it again this year in the draft. He's going to find some guys and just plug them in. And, you know, it's going to work. He's a great coach. He's going to find ways to work. And he's always good in the draft. I mean, he got Edelman in the 6th round. And look at him. He might be – I think he's the toughest wide receiver in the NFL. And he's just a hard worker. You got to love his work ethic.
Rob Gronkowski was drafted in the 2nd round.
3rd? 2nd round? Yeah.
2nd round,
and,
yeah. I mean,
who wouldn't draft him top 10?
Exactly right.
Now.
Agreeable.
Mm-hmm. So I think New England they're going to continue to build. You'll see it in the draft. But I think New England is definitely going to keep it up next year and years to come.
Yeah, definitely I agree with that. I mean, as long as Belichick is coaching the team, you know, alongside a lot of great coordinators, you know, I just don't see them slowing down. I mean, I think Brady's 37 years old. Brady has another 5 years at least in the NFL. At least, I mean, he hasn't had many injury problems except for an ACL tear 7 years ago, and he's long past that. So I definitely see the Patriots at least for the next 5 years, depending on who their quarterback's going to be. I don't think it's going to be Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't think he's going to sit back for 5 years, and I just don't see that happening. I do think that the Patriots are going to have long-term success. Do you think it would be a reach to say that he wins another Super Bowl?
No, I don't think it's a reach because, like I said, I give them a better chance over Seattle to make it to the Super Bowl next year. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to repeat, but I definitely can see Brady and Belichick getting one more. And I think Brady's going to strive to get one more. I think he's going to want five, so he does have the most. Because currently he's tied with Montana and Bradshaw. But I think he will want another one. So I don't think it's crazy or a reach to say that he's going to get number five. I definitely can see that. And, I mean, Brady, it's not like Brady's falling off. You know, it's not like he's getting worse. He's staying where he's at. And this year he improved from last year. If you look at rate and passer rating, he trimmed down his interceptions. He threw for 8 more touchdowns, had a higher completion percentage rating. I know he didn't throw for as many yards, but in the O-line, that O-line's pretty young, and I think they're going to get better. I definitely see this New England team winning another Super Bowl.
Yeah, I do agree with that, and I do agree with that as long as Brady and Belichick are at the helm. As long as Brady and Belichick are leading, you know, this team and this group of guys, they're definitely a Super Bowl favorite, or at least a contender. We do have another call. I think it's one of the same callers. Caller on the air, you have a question or comment?
Yes, this is George from Baton Rouge. I was just calling in on a subject, and then I'm going to retract a little. I think, like Scoey said, as long as Brady and Belichick are there, the Patriots are going to be dominant because you can surround any wide receiver around Brady, and he's going to find a way to get them the ball. Mm-hmm. I mean, they made the playoffs the last 6 years in a row, I believe. So, and if they both come back, I mean, they're obviously going to be a playoff contender. So they might go back-to-back next year for Super Bowls. Or, I mean, as long as they're together, they have a chance of winning one. I do think, though, a lot of people sleep on that defense, and that defense is a pretty solid core. And I think that's another reason they can be a contender for another Super Bowl next year. And they're not paying everybody outrageous on that defense. That's my thoughts about the Patriots. And I want to retract to the Sherman thing that y'all switched over from. Who would you rather have on your team from a coaching standpoint? Would you rather have Marshawn Lynch, someone who doesn't do any talking but looks like an idiot to the media? Or would you have somebody like, would you rather have Richard Sherman, who does all the talking to the media and gives your team kind of that bad reputation on and off the field, but, I mean, he still puts in work just like Marshawn?
Great question, I think. Andrew, what's your opinion?
That's really hard just because I don't like, you know, either of what they do. Probably who I would rather would probably, it's going to sting, probably Richard Sherman. just because, I mean, Lynch is full of fines. Lynch rakes up fines. He grabs the crotch.
Yeah, but that's his own personal fines, though. So, you know, he's not making
still
a fine for the
team. That still reflects on the team. And, you know, apparently the head coach, apparently many people believe that Pete Carroll is the cause for how Seattle act, at least how the players act. I know that whole team, they all don't act like that. And I am a firm believer that if they were traded, they wouldn't just automatically not act like that. But that's definitely a discussion for another day, or if someone or people want to call in and discuss it. Probably Sherman. Sherman at least talks to the media, and doesn't portray himself to look as terribly as Lynch does, I guess. I mean, Sherman makes himself look like an obnoxious idiot who, you know, tries to be intelligent. He could be, but a lot of people think he's intelligent. Probably Sherman. I'd rather not have a player who racks up over $100,000 in fines. So I'd probably rather that. Your opinion on that, Sco?
I don't even know what to say on this one because I respect the both of them as players. And if I'm looking for a guy who's going to give it all on the field, I can pick either one. But if I'm looking for a media attention getter, I guess I have to take Sherman. But if I'm looking for the guy who's all about that action, boss, he's just going to go out on the field and do his thing, I'll take Sherman. But, I mean, I really don't want to pick one because either way, I think you're going to have to deal with some character issues. I don't think I'd want either of them on my team because I think it can kind of hurt the team a little bit either way. But
it wasn't a question. I guess I mean, you got to pick one. So
I know. I guess I'd take Marshawn Lynch.
Do you just think is that just a personal preference, or do you have any like? Do you think one of them is easier to coach than the other? Or?
I think that Marshawn Lynch could possibly give my team more of an advantage.
That's true. I mean, you're right.
I think he would give my team more of it. Because don't get me wrong, Richard Sherman's gonna give my team a chance to win. He's gonna play great. He's a shutdown corner. But I think there's ways to beat Sherman. But if I'm just feeding the rock to Marshawn Lynch 20 times a game, 25 times a game, he's going to give me 100 yards. He's going to get in the end zone for me when I'm in the red zone. So if I'm looking to win a game, and I don't care, really, because I have to pick one, I'm going to pick Marshawn Lynch. I don't care what you think of him as a player on my team. Yeah, you're going to find him personal stuff, but it's not coming out of my wallet. But I think he'll give my team more of a chance to win, so take Marshawn Lynch.
Well, I mean, since they're both obnoxious, I mean, I'll bring it up. I mean, you look at the obnoxiousness of Sherman, how obnoxious Marshawn Lynch has been of late. You know, he was obnoxious. He wasn't really obnoxious last year. I mean, Pete Carroll's been with this team for a while. You know, like, I mean, we know Pete Carroll is an up-tempo coach. We know how he coaches. What do you think he should change? You know, do you think he could change to make the team more disciplined? Because, you know, your opinion, and I know a few other people, their opinion seemed to be that Pete Carroll, lets the players act like that. He causes them to act like that. My opinion is he doesn't. I mean, I know that there's going to be a discipline involved with your head coach, people got to be scared of you, so on and so forth. What do you think Pete Carroll does, especially that just allows for the way they act?
I mean, I don't know if anything particular because I'm not in the locker room, but I'm
mm-hmm.
pretty sure.
If you have a guess, of course.
Practice in, you know, I think he just talks it into that head and like tells them, you know, and cheers them up and pumps them up and, you know, I think he goes, like, a little overboard with it, like, being too, like somebody said earlier, he's just always pushing the limit. And I think that's what he does with when he's with his players. I think he's pushing the limit, and he's giving them too much freedom. I think he could cut back a little, be more strict, because Brandon Browner had issues in Seattle. He goes to a strict coach.
And they released him. He's gone. They didn't re-sign him. They let him go.
They let him go. He goes to New England, and he doesn't have any issues. He's playing under a strict coach like Bill Belichick. I mean, I haven't heard anything bad about Brandon Browner yet. But, I mean, I guess, like somebody said earlier, I'm an old-school coach kind of guy. I'll mm-hmm. take guys like Belichick. I think Pete Carroll's just new style. He's up-tempo. He's really, I mean, and some people are going to like a player's coach. The players love it, I'm sure. I'm sure they love playing for Pete Carroll. And you hear it all the time. But I just think he needs to tune it down a little, you know, be a little more strict with his players.
You just think, I mean, like you said earlier, you said it seems like he just pumps them up too much. I mean, I don't see a problem with the coach pumping them up. I mean, I know that he is a player's coach. Les Miles is a player's coach as well. But then, again, you know, not to have to talk about Les Miles. That's not a conversation we had today. But, like, I use him as an example. You know, Les Miles is a player's coach. I mean, they don't have too many player problems over at LSU. I mean, obviously the obvious ones were taken care of. I just personally don't think that, like, I just don't think that some of the specific guys, you know, I don't think if, because, I mean, let's be honest, when you think, all right, I'll ask you this and be honest, Roscoe, when you think ignorance on the Seattle Seahawks, who do you think?
Can I have two answers?
You could have multiple. You could have six if you think there's six players. If you think there's 12 ignorant players on that team, name them all. Who do you think of? What do you think of ignorance when I ask? When I say ignorance, Seattle Seahawks, who do you think of?
Richard Sherman, Marshawn Lynch.
Okay. Okay.
And Michael Bennett.
Okay, definitely fair. Now, Richard Sherman does not re-sign 1 year, and he goes to a different team. Do you think Richard Sherman changes his whole attitude, his personality, the way he acts, the way he talks in his interviews, the way he talks on the field and everything? Do you think he changes that? Do you think he changes the way he acts? And be honest. Richard Sherman.
I think he changes somewhat.
How does he change? What do you think he does differently?
I think if he's under a certain coach, you know, they're going to tell him, hey, listen, we don't like the way you're talking to the media. Like, we don't like how I don't know what word to use, but I'm sure certain coaches will have him tune it down, and I think he would do that.
So you think all of a sudden Richard Sherman, you know, who went on First Take acting like, and remember, he was on First Take, and this was a few years ago. I mean, you know,
yeah,
Richard
quoted
Sherman,
saying,
you just think,
I'm better at life than you.
Yeah, I mean, you just think Pete Carroll is the sole cause, or do you think Sherman will just eliminate a lot of what he does? Can you hear me, Roscoe?
Yeah, I hear you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're silent with your mic, or your phone's a little off right now.
I said,
there you go.
I don't think Pete Carroll solely. I think he encourages it. I think he, like I said, I think he encourages it. That's all I really have to say about it.
I just don't think, I mean, I think it's all opinionated, because I don't think there is much fact behind it. Brandon Browner, you did mention, had problems. He didn't have many problems. His problem in Seattle was he didn't pass his drug test. So he didn't pass his drug test. He got suspended for the playoffs at the end of the year. He then goes to New England. He serves his suspension and he plays. He just didn't fail on all the drug tests. That's like Josh Gordon. We all know Josh Gordon shouldn't be doing drugs anymore, right? But he keeps doing it. I mean, so do you think if Josh Gordon went to another team, he'd stop doing drugs? I don't think so. Brandon Brown, on the other hand, just went to another team and stopped doing drugs. I mean, it's not like Pete Carroll is saying, hey, Brandon Browner, you can do drugs, man. Do all the drugs you want. And then Belichick is like, no, man, you have to pass your drug test. That's a league-wide thing. I don't think Brandon Browner has an effect on Pete Carroll, or Pete Carroll has an effect on him. Richard Sherman, I think Richard Sherman goes anywhere, he's going to speak as loudly as possible. Junior Gillette, obviously, the comments he made for the Saints this past year, horrible, ridiculous, annoying. Sean Payton, fearful head coach, and I do have a caller and I will be getting to you. You know, fearful head coach, Junior Gillette, that didn't scare him to not make comments. I mean, some of these guys are still going to make the comments they make, and they're just going to not care. You know, they're grown men, and they know what they want to say. Marshawn Lynch, if he goes to somewhere else, he's still going to do the same stuff he's doing now. Do you think that Marshawn Lynch would all of a sudden be in a better situation if he left Seattle? Or do you think it's just, what do you think it is on his standpoint? Like, do you think he would go somewhere and just start talking to the media?
Who knows? I mean, probably not. But he does have certain interviews with people talking to the media. But, I mean, I don't know. I think they could change. I'm not saying they would because I don't know these people. I'm not saying they're definitely going to change. But, I mean, it's a lot of speculation. And it's a lot of opinions.
I could have this conversation all day because with how Richard Sherman's personality is, I just do not think other head coaches, I mean, I just don't think he would do it. I mean, I have, like, you'd have to think, give me the last time that, you know, if you can remember, when was the last time a player said something stupid in an interview and he was suspended or released from the team? You really can't think because it just hasn't happened. Now, I'm not trying to say Pete Carroll maybe doesn't enlist. He might, you know, he doesn't have a certain type of discipline. Like, let's be honest. He is, like you said, he's a player's head coach. Well, look what he's done. He's improved that franchise heavily. Not just finding Russell Wilson as his quarterback, but, I mean, everything he's done, that the whole team got turned upside down. And now they were, the past 2 years, the top NFL favorite, and they succeeded heavily. Pete Carroll's a lot to do with that. And I do not like Pete Carroll. For anyone who doesn't know, I am a LSU fan. His USC days have me womb still open. So I'm not saying I like Pete Carroll. I'm just saying I don't think he affects it as much. And we'll get off the subject, but I definitely would love to talk. Roscoe, a lot of people talked it going into the Super Bowl. And I think I know where you're headed with this, and I think we're both going to agree on it. Do you think the Super Bowl win solidifies Tom Brady best quarterback in NFL history, number one, all time?
I believe so. After the win against the Seahawks, I have him as the best quarterback in history. He now has 4 Super Bowl victories, 3 Super Bowl MVPs. He holds multiple of Joe Montana's records. He most career postseason passing yards, most career playoff passing touchdowns. I mean, he just has so many accolades in the postseason when everybody says it really matters. And I mean, he's never had the greatest weapons. We know this. 1 year he did have a Randy Moss in 2007, mm-hmm. but that wasn't the greatest Randy Moss there was. In my opinion, Brady had the greatest season of any quarterback in 2007. 50 touchdowns to 8 interceptions. 4,800 yards. When, I mean, in 2007, 4,800 yards was a lot, you know?
It was, yeah.
There wasn't, it's not like 7 years later like we are now, where 5,000 yards is happening multiple times a year. I mean, you got Ben Roethlisberger and Drew Brees tying for most yards, I think it was this year. And
yep,
he's 2 spectacular catches away from being 6-0 in Super Bowl victories. David Tyree and Mario Manningham, both of them made spectacular catches. And I'm not saying those catches single-handedly beat the Patriots in those Super Bowls, but they had huge impacts. He could be 6-0, 6 Super Bowl titles. And I know a lot of people are going to compare him, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady.
Joe Montana, too. Don't forget Joe.
I mean, yeah, definitely Joe Montana and Terry Bradshaw, you know, those two guys are great too. But a lot of people now, they like to debate Peyton Manning against Tom Brady. And if you look at it, Peyton Manning against Seattle, Brady against Seattle, they were the same team. They were the same defense, the same great defense, and Brady torched them. He really is the best quarterback to play the game. He's the GOAT. I mean, obviously Montana and Brady played different times. What Brady's done, it's – and the Super Bowl in 2007, going for the perfect record, if a few wide receivers don't drop some balls, maybe those balls were overinflated. Ha, ha, ha. But if a few wide receivers don't drop a few balls and, you know, they get close, I mean, he's a few catches away from his own team to winning that Super Bowl. You know?
Yeah. He and we do agree on this. I do think Tom Brady is the best NFL quarterback to ever play the game. And I'm talking... I will say I'm talking talent-wise, too. I'd rather him over Peyton Manning. And I do take it playoff-wise as well. I looked at stats, and it was amazing. You know, Tom Brady is, first off, and a lot of people compare him and Drew Brees. Him and Drew Brees are not far off. Tom Brady missed a full year of football due to an ACL injury, and he's 3,000 yards behind Brees passing career passing yards. But Tom is amazing, man. Tom is 8 touchdowns short of 400. He's got 4 Super Bowl champions, 2 MVPs, league MVPs. He's got a career winning percentage. He has the highest winning percentage of any NFL starting quarterback. 77% of his games he's won. That's astonishing. That is something that is amazing. 21-8 in the playoffs. He's 4-2 in Super Bowls. Like you said, he's 2 amazing catches from winning 6 Super Bowls, and he could go out and win one more. I don't see why he couldn't. He has great IQ, great pocket presence. He did something. I mean, Joe Montana had one of the best defenses of all time and one of the best coaches, if not the best coach of all time. You know, you think amazing coaches, you think Don Shula, Vince Lombardi, Bill Walsh, and Montana had a great head coach, a great – you can go, Roscoe, what's up?
He also had greater weapons than Peyton Manning on the offensive side of the ball. I think I saw something today on Twitter because, I mean – if you're a sports junkie, Twitter's a great place to be. You know, you see a lot of things pop up. And I think I saw something. It was Brady had, like, 2 All-Pros his whole career, something crazy. And Joe Montana had 11. It was something crazy where, like,
no,
Joe Montana had greater weapons.
Joe Montana had Jerry Rice, then on the defensive side, you know, we got Ronnie Lott, Singletary. He had a lot of solid guys, and he had a great defense. You know, I even saw someone. I was just reading some threads in a blog, and they're like, "Oh, well, Tom Brady, if he didn't have Adam Vinatieri, he wouldn't have Super Bowls." It's like, are you kidding me? Is that the level of ignorance we're going to now? Adam Vinatieri. I mean, now let's talk about San Francisco's defense. I mean, that Joe Montana had. Joe Montana played just as long, 41,000 yards for Joe Montana, 4 Super Bowls. I mean, like, I don't even want to start that, but I think it's, I mean, just Tom Brady, man. He's clutch. He's smart. He's not athletic. Like, I'm not talking like, oh, he's like Russell Wilson. He's like Russell Wilson or Russell. If Russell Westbrook, you say someone's athletic and you think of like Russell Westbrook or something, Tom Brady, he's athletic. He aged terribly. He's 37. And like I said, he could play another 5 or 6 years. His O-line has been protecting him. It's not crazy to say he plays another 6 years. Peyton is on the verge of retirement. I think Peyton will play another year, but he's on the verge of retirement and he's, how old is Peyton's 38 or 39, Roscoe, do you know?
39, I believe.
39 is 2 years ahead of Tom Brady, and I think Tom Brady will outlast him. But yeah, I think he is the best quarterback in NFL history, and he still has a lot of time to go. Peyton hasn't shown up in the playoffs because he has ran into Tom Brady. I don't see how anyone can think Manning is better than Brady. I know Manning has 69,000 yards. but that doesn't make an amazing quarterback if you can just chuck the ball all over the field. You have anything else to add, Roscoe?
I was going to say another thing. Look at the weapons that Peyton Manning's been with his whole career. Reggie Wayne, Marvin Harrison.
Yeah.
Now he's got, I mean, debatable the best wide receiver in the NFL right now, Demarius. I mean, it is debatable because you can say Antonio Brown. I mean, you can say Calvin Johnson, Dez Bryant. There's a lot of great wide receivers right now, but that's besides the point. I mean, when you're talking about it, you don't have Brady, you don't have Manning. Who do you want, Demarius or Julian Edelman? You know, that's the top wide receivers that they're dealing with. I mean, obviously, one has a better weapon than the other, but I think it's what Brady's done, how consistent he is.
And even tell me Tom Brady's amazing running backs he's had in his career.
Oh, he's let's run down the list. Kevin Falk, Corey Dillon, I think his name was.
LeGarrette Blount, Stephen Ridley.
Hey,
Jonas
don't
Gray.
Don't give LeGarrette any hardship, man.
I'm not giving him hardships. I'm just saying, like, he's never had, you know, at the end of his career, Elway had Terrell Davis. You know, in his prime, Brett Favre had Amon Green. There's a lot of good quarterbacks that had good running backs, and Brady's never really had a great one.
I mean, Manning had Edgerrin James.
There you go. Joseph Addai, too. Definitely a great quarterback. Running back. Wrapping it up, you know, was definitely a great show talking about one of the greatest games we ever saw. Fun Pete Carroll debate, which I'm sure will definitely continue on between me, you, and some friends. I definitely feel that coming. But to wrap up the show, Roscoe, we got 2 minutes left. Give me your favorite moment from the NFL this year. I don't care what it was. I don't care if it was fantasy, if it was real life, if it was watching a game, if it was a play. What was really fun for you this past year in the NFL?
All right, I'm going to go to this quickly. I had two favorite moments. An actual, you know, great play moment, which was the Odell Beckham catch. I think that was everybody's favorite moment of the year. That catch was spectacular.
Especially if you were watching
even
it live.
Even as a non-LSU fan, that catch, you know, Odell Beckham, he shocked me. That was great. But my favorite moment was the San Diego comeback over San Fran because of fantasy.
Great game.
Philip Rivers, my starting quarterback, it was a great game. He leads them back from a 21-point deficit in San Fran. He led my team to victory in fantasy that week. And
I had Antonio Gates. I'm with you on that.
I think that was one of the best games of the year and maybe my favorite moment of the whole year.
Okay.
What about you?
All right, well, I took the same route as you. Definitely Odell Beckham. I'll never forget where I was. I fell to the floor literally in amazement because I watched that happen live. My favorite moment would be the my NFL fantasy football semifinals going up against the number one seed. I had Andy Dalton as my quarterback and Jeremy Hill, and I was working. I was pumped. I was screaming as Jeremy Hill busts an 85-yard run. So definitely watching Jeremy Hill and the always great Andy Dalton lead my fantasy team to the championship, which I did lose to yours truly, Roscoe. So,
Round of applause
for Roscoe. But thanks for the show, guys. Download this podcast. We'll catch y'all next week.